Hello, folks. This is Sans News Bites, annotated news update from the leader in information security training, certification, and research. This is for November 18th, 2025, volume 27, number 85, and this is Sans episode 26. This newsletter has items from editors, and it's noted where clearly where we take their comments from, as they are quoted. And maybe I could have done better on writing that. I knew what I wanted to write, but I'm a little bit time constrained because of a show in a little while, but I should not be this hasty in the future. This file that I'm reading from can be made to you, and we'll talk a little bit about that in just a moment. It is transcribed by Jared Reimer, that's me. If you want a copy in 40 cell or 30 cell, let me know by sending an email to tech@menvi.org. That's T-E-C-H at M-E-N-V-I.org. Remember that you can also iMessage that address if you wish, and you can also text or call 804-442-6975. You can also use that for WhatsApp. You can also leave a message on the comment line at 888-405-7524. No matter what method you use, and I didn't write all of this down in these notes, let me know which Braille language and sound length you want, i.e. eBay, which is where I'm reading from, or UEB. eBay is English Braille American Edition, and UEB is Unified English Braille. If you want a different cell length, let me know if you want the 40 cell or a 30 cell. And also, while Top of the News starts on page 1, on the 40 cell copy, the rest of the news will start on page 5 for your convenience. I didn't write that in the file because I don't know if people will want 30 cells and what page number it will be, and I don't want to write two different things depending on the length of the file. CBC, or Computer Braille Code, has been used in English Braille American edition of the file for file names where it is discussed, i.e. cmd.exe would now be in Computer Braille Code because it's a file name and it's part of the computer language. This may not be completely accurate, especially if the code doesn't end correctly, i.e. there's an underline but no closing symbol because the system is taking the full 40 cells, and of course it doesn't use any breaking indicators, and we have not tried to fix that because of issues with the way this works with speech and the talking edition, and Bob already knows about this with Braille 2000. So I wrote in the file that we will not be breaking the entries as discussed in CBC where the item needs a second line. Okay? Just a little bit of housekeeping for you that you can contact me as above if you wish. And again, we have clearly notated where editor's notes are. And of course, I put my own comments in some of this. But where there are no comments, I'll give you my own after we read the particular item. And I didn't put this in the file either, but if you would like to look at the newsletter. A copy will be in the show notes, or go to sands.org/newsletters. We'll be sure to make this transcribers page more efficient in the next release of Sands. This newsletter is from this past Tuesday, and I still have Fridays, and we will be trying to get things out. I do have the entire week off, so we'll try and get some Sands out in the wild for you. Here's the table of contents for this Sands News Bites. For top of the news, Fortinet patches active exploit flaw in FortiWeb. CISA adds it to KEV, 1 week mitigation deadline. And by the way, at the time we're recording this, the deadline has now passed. But if you are listening to this and you were not aware, then you will need to patch this. And we did not get a chance to put this into Braille until now because of my other commitments. The next item, Google sees significant memory safety bug reduction in Android due to Rust adoption. I found that quite interesting. And finally, for top of the news, Logitech discloses data breach. And this one is quite interesting. And I know I have done some blogging, including one that was found in the Sands Diary section dealing with the finger command, with it being used for clickjacking. I actually wanted to include it, but all I see is a link, and there's really nothing I can do about that. So, if you want, look at the Sands newsletter and search that out. And if you want to read what they have to say, you can do that. So, here is the rest of the week's news for that newsletter. The first item is Eurofiber says information stolen during cyber attack. Lighthouse phishing kit disrupted following Google complaint. Amazon inspector researchers find NPM registry hit with T token farming. And we're going to have to talk a little bit about what farming is for those who do not know what this actually is. Updates to Akira Ransomware Joint Security Advisory. This might have to be our, what I call on this podcast, moron of the podcast. I do try to keep the language very clean on this podcast. I'm really trying my best to do that, but some of these things just irritate me. In other podcasts, it's known as the Stupid F Award. This one is DoorDash, Data Breach, and Email Spoofing Risk. If I'm mispronouncing these items, and you know how it's pronounced, then please let me know how it's pronounced. It would be best to do this by voice where I can hear you pronouncing the word that I may be mispronouncing. Because some of these terms are not clear to me. And even if I've heard the pronunciation, I've never seen the spelling. So when I see the spelling, I may mispronounce it. So if you find that I'm mispronouncing it, especially in this next item, please let me know. Kubernetes is retiring Ingress and Jinx. And that's our final item. So, again, in that particular item, if I'm mispronouncing something, please let me know. For those of you who are following in the Braille, we now move to page 1. And to the best of my knowledge, I fixed all of my US and ITs. And as I stated, we're going to try grade 3 or computer Braille to assist in knowing what's, you know, computer language like cmd.exe versus the rest of the file. Fortinet patches actively exploited flaw in FortiWeb, that's F-O-R-T-I web. CISA adds it to Kev with a 1-week mitigation deadline. Fortinet has fixed a critical CVSS 9.8 path traversal vulnerability, CVE 2025-64446, in multiple versions of Fortinet FortiWeb application firewall. The flaw could be exploited to execute administrative commands on the system via crafted HTTP or HTTPS requests. Now, for the reader, I could have put these terms, HTTP and HTTPS, in the computer Braille code, but I felt that it wasn't necessary because it's not really leading anywhere, so I'm leaving it as plain text. But this is standing for Hypertext Transfer Protocol and Hypertext Transfer Protocol Security, where you connect through these protocols to get to the internet, especially when visiting a web page like jaredreimer.com, .net, .info, you know, menv.org, or any other website you may visit. This, I'm only mentioning this because this would have been a perfect example to use such code, but because it's just text, I'm going to leave it there. Return to text. There have been reports of an actively exploited FortiWeb path traversal flaw for a month. A month? And we're only finding out about it now, either through this newsletter or through the tech press. This is where I would start swearing and carrying on, as we do on TSB. But I'll just say, you have to be kidding me. Fortinet has now acknowledged observing active exploits of the vulnerability in the wild. The issue has fixed in FortiWeb 8.0.2, and that's how they write it. I didn't change a thing there. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, added the CVE to the known exploited vulnerabilities KEV catalog on November 14th, Federal Civilian Executive Branch FCEB agencies have until November 21st to mitigate the issue. By the way, November 21st was this past Friday. We're going to make sure we release this podcast as quickly as possible so that those who may listen to me through my program will know that this is critical. If I don't release this program today, it will be released on Sunday, and that will be the 23rd, which I may just do, release it in the morning on Sunday, the 23rd. So when you receive this podcast, it would be 2 days past due. So get moving on it if you have not patched. CISA says that organizations unable to imply update to a fixed version of FortiWeb should disable HTTP or HTTPS for internet facing interfaces. Ulrich has a great point, and this is one of several where we quote these guys. And again, as I wrote, and I was trying to write this in a hurry, we are clearly stating this. He writes, "This incident underlines why proper vulnerability disclosure by vendors is so important. Fortinet patched the issue, but never disclosed that the update included a patch for a critical vulnerability, buying time for attackers to exploit devices. Vendors must provide consumers with sufficient details. These details must enable customers to detect, compromise, and properly assess the risk posed by the vulnerability." Dukes writes, "According to a recent insurance report, Fortinet has had 208 vulnerabilities in its products over the past year." I'll repeat that again. According to a recent insurance report, Fortinet has had 208 vulnerabilities in its products over the past year. Seems like a lot for a company, and this perhaps speaks to a larger problem. Perhaps a company-wide stand-down day is in order for secure software development training to be provided to all developers. I would also use the time to assess against the NIST SSDF using the recently released CIS guide on assessing software security practices. I've been questioning, and this is me writing by the way, I've been questioning their security practices on a regular ever since I saw them in the newsletter, but more after several times of being featured in the newsletter. I wonder what's going on with the company. A number of editors commented besides the ones we're quoting here as part of our commentary. And yes, I'm using the editors as part of our commentary because I've been questioning this behavior for a while, ever since I started getting back into SANS. And I know I missed a month because I was sick. But regardless of whether I was sick or not, how many times do you have to talk about a company before you start talking about telling people to get rid of it, which is what I've been doing? Get rid of it. It seems useless. With so many bugs in it, there are probably better products to use. But I'm not in your shoes. I can only say so based on what I'm reading. You have to be the one to decide whether or not this meets your criteria of changing a provider. Google sees significant memory safety bug reduction in Android due to Rust adoption. Google says that memory safety bugs have dropped below 20% of total vulnerabilities in Android due in large part to the adoption of the Rust programming language. And Rust is one of many, many programming languages, and I believe from what I've heard of it, it is quite extensive, and it is one of the older languages out there, not the newer one. According to a blog post by Android's Jeff Vander Step, they adopted Rust for its security and are seeing a 100x reduction in memory safety vulnerability density compared to Android's C and C++ code. But the biggest surprise was Rust's impact on software delivery. With Rust changes having a 4x lower rollback rate and spending 25% less time in code review, the safer path is now also the faster one. The blog addresses Google's plan to expand Rust adoption to other elements of the company's software stack, and also details a near-miss memory safety bug in unsafe Rust. And since I don't have any knowledge of this, I could have put the comments from the editors, but if you really want to read those, then you may go over to our show notes. And I really need to get back into just posting the notes to the blog like I used to do and haven't done for a while now. And since I'm going to have a week off, we are going to catch up the blog with podcasts. Oh boy. Here we go. Logitech discloses data breach. Logitech has disclosed a cybersecurity incident that resulted in the exfiltration of data. In a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, and yes, I do see, by the way, I missed a U.S. Sighting, as well as an ad hoc announcement as required by Swiss law, the Switzerland-based company writes that it believes that the unauthorized third party used a zero-day vulnerability in a third-party software platform and copied certain data from the internal IT system. The zero-day vulnerability was patched by Logitech following its release by the software platform vendor. The compromised data likely include employee, customer, and supplier information. While Logitech has not identified the third-party platform it says was breached, ransomware threat actors included Logitech on a list of organizations compromised through vulnerabilities in, you guessed it, Oracle e-business suite. Just come clean. That's all we ask for. It's not going to hurt you by saying that the third party was Oracle and that you've patched it with Oracle's help. At least we'll know what's going on and that you care about our data and our safety. The fact that you don't disclose where your stuff is tells us nothing, except that you don't really care. You patched it, but was it data in-house or data outside? We find out it's data outside, we don't know what provider. This is getting old, I think. Okay, folks. If you're following on the Braille, we are now going to the rest of the news, which is found on the next Braille page. I'm not going to give you the page number, because if you're asking for a 30-cell file, it may be different than the 40-cell copy. Okay? Eurofiber says information stolen during cyber attack. French telecommunications company Eurofiber says data were stolen last week during a breach that affected internal company systems. The incident occurred on Thursday, November 13th, when attackers exploited a vulnerability in the ticket management platform used by Eurofiber France regional brands Eurofiber, and this is Eurafibre, FullSave, Netawan, Avilia, as well as the ATE customer portal. I would say 8 customer portal, but I think this is an acronym, which corresponds to Eurofiber France's cloud division, operating under the Eurofiber Cloud Infra France brand. The attackers were able to exfiltrate data from the breached systems. The breach did not disrupt Eurofiber operations and appears to have affected only individuals in France. Eurofiber customers in Belgium, Germany, and the Netherlands were not affected. Dukes writes, "What I've been trying to say for years here, whether it's a phishing attack, breach, a scam you fell or almost fell for, or any other story of this nature." He writes, "The first step is to acknowledge you have a problem. In this case, a security breach." Okay, so in the first step, if you wanted to tell your story of how you almost got scammed, recognizing, like Nick did in one of our Security Box programs, that there was a scam that was taking place, or a potential phishing attack. So he did that. The second step is to do something about it. Well, he did something about it. He recognized this was not where he needed to be. He exited out of there, made sure to report the message if he could, and move on with his day. A rigorous review of your cybersecurity program is what's needed, and in this case, also, additional focus on the patch management process. Finally, the third step is to speak up about what happened so others can learn, perhaps alluding to what additional measures have been taken to, quote, strengthen system security, end quote. And the final thing Nick did was come on our podcast, explain what the message was about, how he almost got taken, and how he recognized that this was a problem and backed out of it. Okay? So all of these Nick did. And he also talked about it so he could teach us what he did, what he looked at, and how he made sure not to move forward with whatever it was they were wanting. Whatever it may be, it doesn't matter at this case. It doesn't matter if it was a Telegram thing where it pops up a capture and the link looks wrong. Maybe it's one of these various text messages you get claiming that, you know, some campaigner needs money, but it's going to some website which is basically a third-party money collector, and they've even said now that any, you know, campaigner who needs money is not going to ask for all of your info, just enough to take the payment and be done. They're not going to ask for, you know, like bank account details and financial information on how much you've donated and so forth, like some of these other sites do. I write here, if we don't talk about it, how can we learn, pass the knowledge, and show that we're trying the best we can? And that's a question. Oh boy. Well, this is actually good news that we're about to talk about here. But about the last one before we get into our good news segment here. I want to encourage anyone who's been targeted to come on to a podcast you trust and talk about your story and talk about what you've learned from it. Because there are always new people on the internet, and if they don't know what to look for, how is anybody going to learn? It's okay to make a mistake. It's what we do after we made the mistake that will teach us what went wrong. Okay, I clicked on this link. This link went to X. I looked at it. It was a CAPTCHA solving something rather. I know that this website, for example, let's say jaredreimer.net. So, jaredreimer.net doesn't have a CAPTCHA on the page. So, why is jaredreimer.net, this website, asking for a CAPTCHA when I first even get there? Then you look at the link, and it's not the exact spelling that you might have in my bookmarks, or your bookmarks, or what have you. And then you realize, maybe I shouldn't go there. And you tell your story, and you talk about where you went, so people know not to go over there. And that's what it's about. That's exactly what it's about. Now, the last time we were on this program, we talked about something called Lighthouse and some very interesting things going on with them. I'm still not sure if it's an actor group or what this is, but I think we've gotten some good news out of this. And the title of this is Lighthouse Phishing Kit Disrupted Following Google Complaint. One day after announcing a legal complaint and request for injunction filed against 25 unnamed maintainers of the Lighthouse Phishing as a Service PaaS kit, Google has informed news sources that the criminal enterprise has lost access to its cloud server, apparently due to complaints of malicious activity. Google contends that Lighthouse operations have been effectively shut down. Ford Merrill from SEC Alliance reports that several domains historically associated with Lighthouse infrastructure appear to no longer be resolving to DNS requests at present. Casey Best, Director of Threat Intelligence at Silent Push, also confirms that all Lighthouse Telegram channels previously tracked have been deleted or taken down due to Telegram TOS violations. Google is seeking injunctions and damages for harm caused to their reputation when Google brands appear in fraudulent and malicious contexts, such as in Lighthouse's templates for online and SMS phishing. Neely writes, "This was an unexpectedly rapid response to have to the lawsuit. It's nice to see consequences from TOS violations. Even so, remain vigilant while the domains aren't resolving and Telegram channels are gone. Don't assume that these guys, also known as Smishing Triad, aren't looking for a new venue to launch from." Murray also weighs in by saying, "This appears to be the result of the visibility and notoriety brought by Lighthouse, brought to Lighthouse by the suit, rather than any relief granted by the court in response to the suit or any other action taken or initiated by Google." I agree with these, and we'll see what happens. Let's see. It says, "I agree with these, and we've said that it may not be about money or anything else, but disrupting them and forcing them to spend money to rebuild will be enough for a respite on the attacking going on. Since the actor or group is not making money, it's a win for everyone." And we go back to this whole ordeal of, well, why don't we, you know, prosecute them and get them taken care of? Well, it's not as simple as going ahead and prosecuting them, because some of them are not in the United States. Right? So, that's just not going to work. So, if we force them off the net, right? If we force them off the net, then we could have a respite of time where they're going to be too busy rebuilding. And that could be a good thing. Trust me. Oh, there was a quote mark there. All right. Okay. The quote goes there. And, I tell you what, it's an interesting ordeal. This is definitely good news in my book. So, let's keep that good news going. Because I love the good news. And while I'm in the other file to see why I spotted a marking there in the Braille copy, I am fixing the U.S. for the U.S. Security and Exchange Commission, and we will release a new Braille file if needed, but I'm not going to do it just for one mistake. But I was actually looking at something while I was checking on making sure I had everything right. So, let's go ahead and move on with Amazon Inspector researchers. Okay, so these are researchers here. They find NPM registry hit with T-token farming. Supply chain attack. Amazon Inspector security researchers have detected more than 150,000 malicious NPM packages associated with a token farming campaign. What makes this attack different is that instead of injecting malicious code into NPM packages, the perpetrators laced the packages with code that allowed them to self-replicate and earn T tokens or rewards for open source contributors or contributions. In late October 2025, Amazon Inspector security researchers deployed a new detection rule paired with AI to identify additional suspicious package patterns in the NPM registry. Within days, the system began flagging packages linked to the T.xyz protocol, a blockchain-based system designed to reward open source developers. On November 8th, the Amazon Inspector researchers contacted the Open Source Security Foundation, SSF, with whom they then collaborated to assign malicious package identifiers, mal IDs, and coordinate response. If you use these packages, Neely has advice here. He writes, so rather than adding malicious content, as was done in prior NPM campaigns, the attackers were exploiting the systems which reward developers for their contribution to open source packages. Attackers also took advantage of the package.json, that's JSON, file, which is used to install dependencies to install added unneeded packages, resulting in scoring for those packages as well. Grab the Amazon Inspector detector packages tied to this campaign and audit your existing NPM packages, removing those which don't belong or are unneeded. And I realize there's now another quote mark that isn't in its rightful place. All right, folks, just a few minor errors in the Braille, but nothing we can't fix. And of course, if you would like a Braille copy of this and you would rather read, you can. Just send me an email at tech@menvi.org and let me know what version you would like. EBAE, the English Braille American Edition, or UEB. And then what cell format would you like? Would you like 40 cell or 30 cell? And I'll go back in after the recording and fix this other errant quote where it needs to be at the end. Updates to Akira Ransomware Joint Security Advisory. Akira Ransomware is the subject of an updated advisory published jointly by the FBI, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, the Department of Defense Cybercrime Center, DC-3, the Department of Health and Human Services, Europol's European Cybercrime Center, EC3, and partnered cybercrime and security authorities in France, Germany, and the Netherlands. The advisory details up-to-date indicators of compromise, IOCs, and tactics, techniques, and procedures, TTPs, to equip threat hunters against newly observed attack methods. Akira is known for targeting small and medium-sized businesses, but has also attacked larger organizations across manufacturing, education, IT, healthcare, financial services, and food and agriculture. Notably, the threat actor group has now begun encrypting Nutanix, Nutanix, Acropolis Hypervisor, AHV, VM disk files, which diverges from their typical compromise of VMware, ESXi, and Microsoft Hyper-V. The advisory urges organizations to prioritize remediating known exploited vulnerabilities to enable and enforce phishing resistance MFA, and to maintain regular backups, including offline backup storage and regular tests of the restoration process. I say that that's good. We hope that everything goes well there. And I did not put anything in commentary because everything there seems to make sense to me, and there's really nothing more to add. Let's keep up the good work, make sure we're keeping up to date on what these people are up to, so that you don't get handed to. So that's, you know, it could be something where we needed, you know, knowing about what's going on in the field. Alright, folks, it's now time for our stupid moron award. This is the second time we've had a moron within Sans News Bites. DoorDash, data breach, and mail spoofing risk. DoorDash has published an announcement and is emailing affected customers to disclose a data breach detected on October 25th, 2025. Upon identifying the incident, the company's response team shut down unauthorized access, began an investigation alongside an external firm, and referred to the matter to law enforcement. An employee had been targeted by a social engineering scam, which allowed a third party to gain unauthorized access to data belonging to customers, delivery staff, and merchants. Okay, I'll stop here and say, this could happen to anyone. Some type of scam going on, you know, social engineering, what have you. Accessed data vary by individual and may include first and last name, phone number, email address, and physical address. The incident did not involve social security numbers, ID numbers, or any financial details. I'll say here that there is no ID number, as far as I'm aware, even with Uber Eats, and I'm not a DoorDash customer. It better not include payment information, or there's going to be a lot of problems. And your name, your email address, and physical address are, well, kind of public anyway. I mean, look at all the breaches we have. So, you'll see what I mean in a little while when we get to comments. DoorDash has enhanced its security systems for prevention and detection and has implemented additional training and awareness for their employees around various social engineering scams, also providing a call center for inquiries. Affected users and cybersecurity professionals responding on social media expressed dismay over DoorDash's choice to state in the announcement that no sensitive information was accessed. Separately, a security researcher recently discovered a method to exploit a budgeting feature in the DoorDash for Business platform to send branded emails containing arbitrary HTML from a legitimate company domain abused for zero barrier perfect trust phishing. According to Bleeping Computer, while the flaw is now patched, the disclosure process was fraught. The researcher alleges that HackerOne and DoorDash neglected the bug report and withheld a bounty, while DoorDash contends that the flaw was out of scope for the bug bounty program, and that the researcher's pressure on the company was not ethical, despite a 15-month... Yes, I said 15-month delay. Researchers have reported a nearly identical flaw in Uber systems since 2022 with no action taken. And I write, 15 months is quite a long time to withhold something like this, don't you think? Neely writes, when a researcher presents a flaw in or out of scope, you need to address it. Attackers don't care what's in scope. Don't alienate the researcher who is trying to help you improve. You don't have to like that a weakness is found or how it was done, but you don't want those weaknesses shared, nor do you want your VDP disparaged or otherwise rendered ineffective. VDP is a balancing act for both parties, and if you're a researcher, make sure you know where the limit lies, aligns are, and what to do when you find something out of scope. That may require a personal interaction rather than just an electronic interchange. Murray also writes, phone numbers and addresses are sensitive, in part because we use them for out-of-band confirmation of transactions and changes. And yes, I do agree with this, but it's also part of verification. And I disagree on this point, phone numbers are somewhat public, especially if you know where to look. But I do agree it should be protected the best it can and not be forced out there by a breach or other activity type not mentioned herein. So, yes, phone numbers and addresses should be kept private, but we know they're not. So I disagree with that, and we should do better. All right, folks, if I remember correctly, this is our last item. Kubernetes is retiring Ingress and Jinx. Kubernetes has decided to retire Ingress and Jinx. Kubernetes SRCs, Tabitha Sable writes that while the Ingress controller has been popular, the breadth and flexibility of Ingress and Jinx has caused maintenance challenges. Changing expectations about cloud-native software have also added complications. What were once considered helpful options have sometimes come to be considered serious security flaws, such as the ability to add arbitrary and Jinx configuration directives via the snippets annotations. Yesterday's flexibility has become today's insurmountable technical debt. Ingress and Jinx will continue to receive best effort maintenance through March 2026, at which time there will be no further releases, no bug fixes, and no updates to resolve any security vulnerabilities that may be discovered. The GitHub repositories will be made read-only and left available for reference. Users are encouraged to migrate to alternative Ingress controllers. And I was right, that was the last item. The fact here of the matter is that you are now warned about this, and the editors note that the time is now to start looking at changing what you're using. So you should consider that. And going back to the last item, by the way, at DoorDash, the other thing that they had found, which I thought was notated in here but may have been missed, is the fact that they are using no reply at DoorDash.com as part of their recent attack, which was talked about in regards to the budgeting feature for business. This was the one where we were talking about sending arbitrary HTML from a legitimate company domain. So, it is here. So, let me go back a minute and say that the budgeting feature in the DoorDash for Business platform to send branded emails containing arbitrary HTML from a legitimate company domain, no reply at DoorDash.com, and they are using brackets and other things to get people to get it not to be clickable, which could be abused for zero barrier perfect trust phishing. Alright, so if I wasn't clear about that, it is now. So, I want to just go back and make sure that we do have it we have it notated that this is a problem that they do know about, and that it is being sent through a no reply type email address. The editorial board of Sans News Bites, Brian Honan, Kurt Dukes, Chris LG, David Holzer, Ed Scoutis, Gal Spitzner, Jake Williams, Dr. Johannes Ulrich, John Pescator, Josh Wright, Kathy Bradford, Lance Spitzner, Lee Neely, Mark Weatherford, Moses Frost, Suzanne Vatranot, and William Hugh Murray. Sands Institute is located at 11200 Rockville Pike, Suite 200, North Bethesda, Maryland 20852. I will replace the Braille with a corrected copy with things that I've noticed, including the errant quote, for those who already have the Braille file. And if you do want a copy, please let me know by sending me an email at tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Let me know if you want English Braille American Edition or the Unified English Braille, if you want 40 or 30 cell, and I will get you a copy. This is episode number 26. Yes, I believe DoorDash does receive the idiot award, even though Uber has the same bug. Whether it's fixed or not, we don't know. But the fact that DoorDash is sort of saying that, you know, they did this all wrong, and that they're not going to, you know, pay, or HackerOne isn't going to pay, isn't the point. The fact is you're given a bug. Fix it and deal with whether you want to pay through your bounty program or not. So, that is going to end Sans 26. And we will get Sans 27, which will be this past Friday's newsletter, out as quickly and efficiently as we can. Thank you very much for listening, and do make it a great day.